Welcome back to Sharing This. France, the bastion of morality, called on Israel on Thursday to drop plans for new settlements in East Jerusalem, joining the United States and Britain in criticism of the move. We condemn the Israeli authorities on the decision to build 2,600 homes.
Because there's nothing more
Jerusalem.
Nothing's more diabolical than building neighborhoods.
Oh, my. Can you imagine the audacity of those stinking, sliming, disgusting Jews? They're going to build homes. Oh,
how
my.
How dare they?
What's next? Homes and suicide bombers? What's, you know, right, it's a slippery slope from building homes for people to live and then shooting off rockets indiscriminately.
Well, today's homes, tomorrow's playgrounds, maybe some business areas. And then that's
a little employment. I mean, we don't want employment because how are people going to stay dependent upon us and our handouts?
And that's a slippery slope right into, you're going to get
economic success. And
you're going to get ghettos and crime and everything like that. So they're creating crime right now.
How utterly moronic do you have to be to condemn a decision to build homes? And by the way, you know, Jerusalem just so happens to be the capital of Israel. And it's been the capital of Israel for longer than the United States and England and France combined have existed as countries. So if you take the age of France, the age of the United Kingdom and the age of the United States, add them all together. Israel, with a capital of Jerusalem, has existed longer. And they can't build homes in Jerusalem? Flavius, the vomit spokesperson, the vomit projector for France, said, "We urgently call on the Israeli authorities to reverse this decision. It threatened the two-state solution to an independent, democratic Palestinian state living alongside Israel. What color is the sky on your planet, Flavius? What democratic Islamic countries are there? What peaceful Islamic countries are there? When did there become a people known as Palestinians? There are no Palestinians. There are no democratic Muslims, and there are no peaceful Muslims."
That's a pretty odd way to interrupt peace, is by building homes. I mean, even if you did the two-state, even if the two-state thing happened, those homes could still be there. They're not doing anything by building those homes. Are they building these homes and leaving them, you know, saying that people can't move into these homes? Or, I mean,
you know, there was a two-state solution back in the time that Egypt controlled Gaza and Jordan controlled the West Bank and Israel was this tiny little island surrounded on all sides by Muslims and yet managed to survive. What did those peaceful, democratic Muslims do when they were part of Jordan and Gaza? They attacked Israel. That's what they did. They weren't peaceful.
Well,
they weren't democratic.
That's this whole thing.
And they didn't build homes.
The whole thing has been that Israel says, if Israel said, we'll put down our arms and we're done fighting, we're not going to do it anymore.
They'd be destroyed within a week.
They'd be destroyed.
Yep.
And if everybody around them decided, hey, you know what, we're not going to fight anymore, we're going to put down our arms, what happens then?
Then they would live in peace.
They would live in peace. So,
but why would you carve out a state for a mythical people under a mythical name to reward the world's worst terrorists out of the very country that they have victimized? And you call that a solution?
You would do
Flavius, France, United States, Great Britain, wake up.
You would see that as a solution the same way that you would see building a house as a being some sort of dastardly, you know, jab at people. I mean, it's building of a house.
Yeah, the United States State Department said on Wednesday the reports that Israel had moved forward with settlement plans would call into question Israel's commitment to peace. Yes, building settlements building homes, calls into question your commitment to peace. I'm telling you, collectively, the leadership of America, particularly its federal government and State Department and military, has absolutely lost their minds. And we're not alone, unfortunately. I'm not sure there's any gray matter, any cognitive capability in England or France either. And collectively, we know just how depraved and deprived the Islamic world is. So where does one have to go? You know, we're sending out probes to Mars to try to find intelligent life. Now, why not send out a probe on this planet to see if you can find some intelligent life? I'm not sure you could. New York. The lid was lifted off a fierce internal battle at the nation's oldest Episcopal seminary. Yep. It's lost most of its faculty over what they said was the dean's intimidating, disrespectful leadership. You know, the Episcopals are Catholicism light. They're a derivation of the Anglicans. They were created when an English king couldn't get the Pope, who was willing to engage in all manner of criminal behavior to sanctify his divorce for religious or political reasons. So he said, okay, we'll just create our own church, and the king will be the new pope. They call that the Anglican Church, or the Episcopal Church is kind of America's version of that. It's always great to have a church born out of adultery. 8 of 10 professors who had trained future priests at the General Theological Seminary in Manhattan say that they were fired this week after going on strike to protest against the Reverend Kurt Dunkel. Compounding the messy drama, the seminary board members say that the teachers had resigned. Okay. Well, we don't know what has actually happened. There's 86 students in the seminary. And they say that the staff and professors have intimidated them, and that they have been disrespected, excluded, devalued, and felt helpless. And yet they continue to get a religious education from these people. Dunkel, it's claimed, once told a female faculty member during a meeting that he loved vaginas. It's such spiritual, so uplifting of him. The faculty members also said that he referred to ethnic Asians as slanty eyes, spoke of how black people can do such interesting things with their hair, and said that no one in his seminary should be gay because this is not a gay seminary, but a seminary for normal people. Welcome to the dysfunctional nature of religion, particularly at its highest levels. Now, on top of all of this, the seminary is flat broke. It's beyond broke. This 200-year-old seminary is trying to overcome some $50 million in debt. The only way that it can even resolve some of the debt is to sell off all of its property, but then it couldn't even pay off all of its debt at that point, and then it would just cease to exist. Maybe that's the answer. Put them out of their misery. But at the national level, after the prayers, the nation's highest Episcopal prelate, for about 2 million followers, listened to a throng of seminarians who shared their concerns under the arching stained glass windows of their national cathedral. Some offered one another smiles and intense hugs of support. I think they have a problem. In fact, the Huffington Post wrote, "What the hell is happening at the General Theological Seminary?" And then another source wrote, "The Madness of Reverend Kurt Dunkel and the Trustees of the General Theological Seminary." They were at least timely over the weekend that we celebrated Yom Kippurim, the Day of Reconciliation. They said, "We sincerely hope that it will be possible for us to achieve reconciliations. We are deeply saddened, angry, and frustrated." Of course, they're not trying to reconcile with Yahweh. They are trying to reconcile among themselves. Dateline Nigeria. Yeah, it's tough these days to be an Islamic terrorist organization. Sometimes you just can't catch a break. Boko Haram would normally be top of the news, but no matter how many girls they rape, no matter how many children they kidnap, no matter how many adults they kill, they just don't seem to be able to garner national headlines anymore. Yeah, the Islamic State is way too politically savvy, I guess. So this dateline from Lagos, Nigeria, Boko Haram, they call themselves an extremist Islamic group, they're just simply an Islamic group, in Nigeria has published a video that shows a charred plane wreckage and the beheading of a man identified as the pilot of a missing Nigerian Air Force jet, bolstering the claims that the group shot down the aircraft. Let's see. You're standing next to a crashed military aircraft that was pursuing you. And you've got a video of you standing next to the charred aircraft, of you holding up the pilot and sawing off his head. And they're wondering if whether or not that bolsters the claims that the group was capable of shooting down a military aircraft. Gee, Sherlock, what was your first clue? Now, and here is, this was the fourth video over the weekend of an Islamic group somewhere in the world other than Syria cutting off someone's head. It happened in Algeria. Here it happened in Nigeria. Happening around the Islamic world, and yet the United States wants us to believe that the only non-Islamic group operating as an Islamic group doing beheadings is the Islamic State. Nothing could be further from the truth. The video of Boko Haram in front of a charred and obviously shot down, missing, also, Nigerian Air Force jet, with the pilot of the jet surviving only to be beheaded by the Islamic group Boko Haram. Has the Boko Haram leader, Abu Bakr Shekau, speaking? Now, he's a man that Nigeria's military and government has claimed twice to have killed. First in 2009 and again last year. And if you want to be honest about it, it's three times, because a month ago, they claimed that they killed him once again. Now, they say that it's just a Shekau lookalike who has posed in the group's videos. That tells you something. Let's just say that it is a lookalike. So, killing the man was absolutely irrelevant. Made no difference. It's just like killing Osama bin Laden. Made no difference. You could kill tomorrow Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, and the Islamic State wouldn't change one iota. When you're dealing with a religious foe, the leader is irrelevant. The name of the group is irrelevant. The location of the group is irrelevant. The only thing that matters is that they kill because they're Muslims. Whether he's a dead man talking, whether he's reanimated, whether he has followed in Lazarus's footsteps, or whether he is a really fine actor, the Abu Bakr Shekau on this video says, "Here I am alive. And I will remain alive until the day that Allah takes away my breath. Even if you kill me, it will not stop us from imposing Islamic rule. We are still in our Islamic State, reigning and teaching the Quran." Why doesn't anybody listen? teaching the Quran, calling it an Islamic state, imposing Islamic rule, devoted to Allah. And yet, there's not one in 1,000 Americans who has read the Quran. And, Glenn, apart from the Quran and Islamic hadith, where would you find an Allah?
Well, something like that, you know?
Yeah, I guess you'd find it in Sheol. These guys all publicly admit, just as did the 9/11 suicide bombers, who they are and why they're killing. They're killing in Allah's name. They're trying to impose Islam. They're living and teaching the Quran. I mean, it's not difficult. And then you have an idiot like the President of the United States saying, oh, the Islamic State's not Islamic. Come on. They've done a fine job of admitting who they are. The United States still has a $7 million bounty on Sheikho's head. And yet, why? Why would we pay $7 million for this guy to be dead? What's it to us? And how would we verify it? The video was made available to the Associated Press through the same channels used previously and seems to show the same man. Nigeria's defense headquarters suggested in a blog that the insurgents had manipulated images and had cloned another Sheikho. You know, we need to issue our apologies to Islam. Here on this program, we have said that one of the great problems of Islam is it stifles innovation. That there's no great university in any Islamic country, that there's no great scientific advancement that has been promoted by a Muslim, that there are no great health centers or cures to terrible diseases being promoted in Islam. And here, Muslims have learned to clone humans. And
yeah,
we're out, and the rest of the world cloning sheep. They clone this man, according to the head of the Nigerian government.
Oh, brother, talk about naive. I'm not even sure they could artificially inseminate a cow, let alone clone a human.
Well, they don't artificially inseminate animals in Islam. In Islam, they do it the old-fashioned way. It's called bestiality. The video was made available, as I say, and it showed the man identified as Sheikho, Abu Bakr. Abu Bakr is a name that should resonate with those who have actually read the early Islamic source material. Well, Abu Bakr isn't mentioned in the Quran. He is mentioned prominently through the Islamic Hadith. He is the man who was the first to join Muhammad's cause back at the time that he was just mumbling about promoting the pagan gods of the Arabians around the Kaaba and claiming that he was the great prophet of Allah. And then he ended up giving his prophet his 6-year-old daughter. That's Abu Bakr. In the video, the man identified as the moral bastion of Islam, Abu Bakr, who gave his 6-year-old daughter to be a sex toy to the 53-year-old Muhammad to cement their relationship back at the formation of Islam. He says that Boko Haram is implementing strict Sharia law. Now, strict Sharia law means, and by the way, I don't think he said the word strict. I think the journalist just tossed that in to give the inference that, well, you know, he's has an extremist view of Islam, and his view of Sharia is strict. No. There's only one Sharia. There's only one Islam. Islam is Islam. Islam has never been and will never be anything different than Muhammad said it was and Muhammad's example. As those things are chronicled, his words and his example in the Quran and Hadith. That's what Islam is. Islam is Muhammad's words and deeds as they are chronicled in the Quran and Hadith. Period. And there'll be some person listening here, or particularly when it's posted on some forum out there, that will hear this and say, see, the Quran, he's an idiot. The Quran is, in Muhammad's words, it's Allah's. No, it isn't. First of all, even Muhammad doesn't claim that it's Allah's words. He claims it's Gabriel's words. And he only mentions Gabriel because he bought most of his Quran from Jewish rabbis, and he used their citations of their Talmud to create some semblance of religiosity for an otherwise declaration of war. And when you put the Quran in chronological order and set it into the context of Muhammad's life using the two oldest hadith collections, the Sirah, which is the biography of Muhammad collected by Ibn Ishaq, and the Tariq, the history of Islam's formation, a compilation of chronological hadiths by Tabari. When that's done and the Quran is set into the context and chronology of Muhammad's life, you have to be a complete nincompoop not to recognize that it's simply situational scriptures, that the whole thing was spoken to justify Muhammad's perverted life. And the source here is a man who was a pedophile, a rapist, incestuous, mass murderer, vicious terrorist, slave trader, and kidnapper. It's the worst book ever written, and when set into the context of Muhammad's life, it's obvious that Muhammad is Allah. He doesn't just speak for Allah, he is Allah. They're indistinguishable. And as such, there is only one Islam. There's only one Quran, only four sources of hadith or reports from Muhammad and his companions written within 200 years of his death. They're all the same. They all say the same thing. They are the basis of Islam. They're all we know about Muhammad and Allah and the creation of this religion in the 7th century. That's all. Nothing else exists beyond them. And so there is no extreme interpretation of Islam. And there is no strict interpretation of Sharia. Sharia is a legal system based entirely on the words and deeds of Muhammad as they are recorded in the hadith. And since the words and deeds of Muhammad as recorded in the hadith glorify pedophilia, rape, and incest, since they glorify terrorism, mass murder, kidnapping, and the slave trade, since Muhammad was the most perverted and disgusting human to ever live, Sharia law is repulsive. Women are treated worse than animals. Non-Muslims have no rights. Islam is deadly. It's the reason why when I say that Islam needs to be quarantined, we need to completely disengage from Muslims. Stop selling them arms. Stop buying oil from them. Just immediately. Pull all of our troops out of the Islamic countries. All of our ambassadors out of the Islamic countries. All of our bankers, all of our oil experts. And while we're forcing Europe to spank Russia, we ought to be compelling Europe to disengage from the Islamic world. And if we were to do so, if we were to leave the world of Islam on its own, yes, they would be ruthless. Yes, they would kill one another. Yes, they would kidnap those that make the mistake of being lured in to the world of Islam. But who cares? They'd be killing one another. They wouldn't be killing anyone else. And they'd be killing one another if we were to disengage with sticks and stones, not with advanced American weapons. It is the merciful thing to do. It's the thing that is the enlightened thing to do. It's because you can't fix Islam. You can't fix somebody that's got Islam. Islam, when lived as Muhammad lived Islam, is ruthless. It's diabolical. It's menacing. The most deadly plague the world has ever known. And so he is trying to establish Sharia, a legal system based entirely on Muhammad's wife. Examples are shown, including stoning to death of a man apparently accused of adultery, the amputation of a hand of a young man accused of theft, the lashings of a individual, and what appears to be a girl covered in a hijab. Of course, they didn't mention the most Islamic of all behaviors, the kidnapping of little girls and using them as sex toys. The video ends with a show of a burnt-out airplane in the rugged bush, two pilots and the Alpha jet that have been missing since September 11th when it left the northwestern town of Yola on a bombing mission against Boko Haram. The video shows a kneeling man in a camouflaged vest with his right hand in a sling, with a fighter hovering over him with an axe, which is then later used to decapitate him. Speaking in English, the victim identifies himself as a wing commander in the Nigerian Air Force and says he was undertaking a mission in the Borno State. We were shot down and our aircraft crashed. To this day, I don't know the whereabouts of my second pilot. The insurgents have stolen military hardware from Nigerian forces, probably including anti-aircraft weapons. And yet we do nothing. We're going to go to war against the Islamic State, whom we have provided with weapons. And yet, as vicious as Boko Haram is, we do nothing. And we're unable to make the connection between Boko Haram and the Islamic State, that they're both Islamic. Islam is not the only hideous religion, nor is the Episcopalian version of Christianity. A stampede at a popular Hindu festival in eastern India occurred and left 32 people dead. Thousands of people were starting to leave the grounds after celebrating the Dushera festival when panic erupted, and 32 people, including women and children, were trampled to death. Nothing says religion better than trampling people to death. Scores more were seriously injured. The crowds were exciting the Gandhi maiden venture after watching giant effigies of Hindu demon King Ravana set ablaze in the tradition for the Dashera, a custom especially enjoyed by families when people rushed and fell. Yes, they had giant effigies of a Hindu demon king set ablaze. And that's what caused them to trample one another. I do want to go ahead, Doug Glenn.
South American Soccer Society has complained about this because they say the trampling of people in stampedes is their shtick.
Yeah, as are the folks in Spain with the running of the bulls. Yeah, there's a lot of places where people are trampled. This is it's not all often that it happens in a religious ceremony, although it does happen with some regularity in India. And I have no sympathy. Yeah, I understand that children and innocent women were trampled to death, and they were there just trying to be religious. But, you know, if next year at the Kaaba, everyone that goes is somehow dies of SARS, I won't lose a tear. Won't shed a tear. And in this case, you want to go off and be religious, then all you're doing when your life is taken prematurely is you're just getting a shorter ride. Because at the end of the day, your soul is going to be exterminated. There isn't a single religious Hindu in heaven. Not a single Christian in heaven. Not a single religious Jew in heaven. And all right, heaven was not made for the religious, so they're just shortening their time. Some would say even good riddance. But I didn't know these people. I just know that they were absolutely lost to be at a religious festival. The President of the United States in his address to the world wants us to believe that the Islamic terrorists operating in Iraq and Syria have perverted one of the world's great religions. This was the line that was used immediately after 9/11. You had so many imams rush to America's media to tell us that the jihad was a spiritual struggle and had nothing to do with Islam and nothing to do with fighting. Then, of course, as jihadists around the world continued to murder people by the hundreds of thousands, no one bought that line anymore. But now the President of the United States, evidently out of touch with reality, says that these jihadists in Syria and Iraq have perverted the world's great religion. And I ask you, what part have they perverted? Beheadings are part of Islam. The Quran mandates it. Rape is approved in Islam. The Quran endorses it. Kidnapping is a Quranic specialty. Muhammad engaged in it regularly. The slave trade, huge part of Islam's initial success. What part of their behavior is not Islamic, Mr. Obama? The only part of the Obamanator statement that was accurate was his term of pervert. They have perverted. Pervert is a perfect depiction of Muhammad. I mean, after all, what would you call a man that at 50 has sex with his best friend's six-year-old daughter? What would you call a man that has a harem that is comprised mostly of slaves that you have captured after killing their husbands and fathers, and girls, little girls under the age of 10 that were given to him as tribute, that has his adopted son's wife as one of the playthings? What would you call a man who engaged routinely in kidnapping for ransom, who endorsed slavery and participated in the slave markets?
Well, I'd call him a dead man, but most people call him Muhammad.
Yeah. What would you call a man who said, "I've become victorious with terror," who himself was engaged in multiple rapes? I mean, I would call him perverted. I don't know if there's a more apt term. If Muhammad's not perverted, then humankind ought to just give up. If being a pedophile, a rapist, incestuous, a womanizer, a mass murdering, ruthless terrorist, slave trader, and kidnapper is not enough to say that you're perverted, if that's normal, then humanity just ought to give up. But think of the idiocy of taking this man, who was all of those things and worse, calling him great. In fact, dedicating your soul to a religion that he alone conceived. I mean, how stupid do you have to be? You know, for all of those Muslims out there that are promoting Islam as a wonderful religion and, you know, don't commit all these terrorist beheadings in my name, wearing the hijab in a free country, going to the mosques, claiming to be a Muslim in America, and you are knowingly, deliberately getting your spiritual advice from a pedophile and rapist, a mass murdering terrorist, slave trader, and kidnapper? You're out of your ever-loving mind? You know, when I say that Islam ought to be declared illegal in America because it is a terrorist manifesto, and we say that terrorism is a crime, because it is a declaration of war against all humankind, and that would be treasonous, then that's a crime. That Islam ought to be declared illegal because it is treasonous, deadly, because it promotes sexual assault and sexual abuse, which are crimes, that we would be actually doing Muslims a favor if we declared Islam illegal in America. And, of course, we'd be doing the masses of Americans who Muslims terrorize a great favor. And then if we were to completely isolate Islam once again, we're doing them a tremendous favor in addition to the rest of the world. Now, rather than isolating them, we're empowering them. We're fueling their rage. And we're providing weapons of mass destruction where they're able to kill one another by the hundreds of thousands as opposed to by the hundreds. I mean, the world was much better off. The Muslims in Afghanistan were better off when the Taliban occasionally stoned a woman to death versus Afghanistan now, where they have advanced weapons, American weapons, and where on any given day they can kill hundreds of people, and where their suicide bombers are especially lethal. I know that it sounds strange to our ears and to hear, but the reality is the most passionate thing to do is to declare Islam illegal because it is a terrorist manifesto, because it is a declaration of war against all humankind, because it is abusive of women, because it advances the slave trade and kidnapping, that we declare Islam illegal is sane, rational, just, moral, and then isolate, quarantine the world of Islam. Stop providing them with funds for oil. Stop providing them with weapons. Stop encouraging them. Stop invading their countries. Just leave them alone. It would be the most sane, moral, rational, compassionate thing we could do. If only.